On today's Bill of the Flater Show, episode 91, Sherry, China, clocks, corruption, and a cottage. All of this and more. The Flater Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flater Show. Tab for my diet. Love tab. That was a good opening. Welcome to the Flater Show. I'm Kenty, your host. It's late. It's late in the day. Jose is having his breakfast, which is actually his dinner. But we got his breakfast. And he's taking his Selegaline. So isn't that wonderful for his... for his brain candy. That's Jose's brain candy to help his canine cognitive disorder, his bestiality. He just loves humans. I mean, he loves humans. So anyway, welcome to the Flater Show. I'm Kenty, your host, and today we have a wonderful show. I want to thank everybody who has donated to the Flater Show. I mean, not donated to the Flater Show, because actually only have had one donation to the Flater Show. Thank you, JW. He's the only one who made a contribution to the Flater Show directly, besides me and probably John, you know. Whatever. So anyway, it's the Easter Seals, my sponsors for the Easter Seals walk with me. How'd you like the little hypnosis? The hypnosis didn't seem to work too well. You will listen to me, you will sponsor me for the walk for Easter Seals. So anyway, we have, first of all, we have John and Jose donated some donated money to sponsor me. Darren from Florida sponsored me. Wonderful Darren from Florida. Thank you so much. You're a sweetheart. You know, I love that song that you sang on your... You had a ukulele, right? Baritone ukulele. I love it. I love that song. I listen to it often. And so I want you to do some more. That's really great. You said you play piano, so tickle the ivory, honey. Now, oh yeah, know what, Darren? I'm still working on the webpage. I'm waiting for a nice day when there's no wind so I can take my little theater, my cardboard theater outside, and take the photographs to get good light. So we're still working on the website, right? So I love what you did so far. Just let me tell you, everybody, give a hand to Darren because he really did a great job with my website. He sent over what I wanted done. He knows he's the code king. And let's all give a clap and a hug to Darren for that. I really appreciate it. When we're done all this, I want to send you a nice gift. So we'll talk. Actually, I'll call you. Maybe we can exchange phone numbers. I'll call you, and we can talk. And then I also want to get you a gift because you're such a great guy. pardon me. Because we have had two more donations this week, I want to thank JW. Come through, everybody. Clap. Come on, everybody, clap. Give him a clap, JW. And Dude donated some sponsored me for the Easter Sales Walk. Dude. Now, it's interesting. Earlier this week, there was a it said David Ryan was the person who did it. Now it says Dude. So I think it was David Ryan, which I think is David from, I think it's Zillafag. So thank you, Zillafag. Because I got a phone call, which we'll play right here from Mr. David. Love you, David. Let's all clap for David. Let's all give him a hug.
Okay, I can talk. Kenty Kenty! Yeah, I was mean to the poor little handicapped, you know, but, you know, I'm just a bastard. And, but I didn't even know, about donating. I didn't know you had a thing. You were doing a fundraiser. I just kind of heard that and stuff went through. So I'm putting a thing right now Walkman and my thing on my little voice recorder that I listen to. Where the hell's that now? Oh my God, where is my voice recorder? I'll die without it. Okay, here's the... What the hell's this? Ooh, gross. Natural Chapolino cheese just laying on the floor. I think it's some kind of plot. Evil plot. Okay, go to Kenny's site, do that thing and give some money to Easter Shields, you cheap bastard. Okay. Here, I'll play it back. Let me see.
Okay, go to Kenny's site, do that thing and give some money to Easter Shields, you cheap bastard.
Okay, there we go. That's it, you know? It's as good as gold. Good as gold. Talk to you later, baby. Bye.
We have to give JW a hug, too. Did I say that? Everybody, let's group hug. Thank you for sponsoring me. Now we need some more people. I know we have the listeners out there. Come on. Open your wallets. Sponsor me. My goal is $150, but I know we can make more than $150. It's very important to raise as much money as possible for these kids. It helps kids with autism, kids with disabilities. I hate to use the word disabilities. I've emailed some of my podcast friends to help me with this, to ask their listeners to make donations. So if you're listening to this show because you were referred to me, referred to this show because of those shows, hello, welcome, thanks for listening. You don't have to listen. All I want is your money to sponsor me for the Easter Seals Walk because, you know, it's so important. And I also encourage, you know, you, the listener, to get involved with the Easter Seals in your area. It's a fun event, great for the family. And whether you have a, you know, whatever family you're in, right? It's not just a straight event, okay? It's you make it a gay event. So gay people, get yourselves out of popper-filled asses and get into the Easter Seals Walk, okay? You know, it's only one Sunday. Raise some money. You don't have to buy as many martinis at the bar and apple teas or whatever. And you don't have to do as many lines of coke or whatever. Actually, that's a stereotype that gays are just drug-filled, sex-crazed people. But for those gays who are drug-filled and sex-filled, just, you know, stop and take a minute and donate some money. But I know those people who are – those gays who are like that are probably snippy and probably say, well, I don't like retarded people. But, you know, those gays don't deserve the word gay. So let's oust them, the other gay people, the good gay people who help children at Easter Seals, and adults, actually. Helps children and adults. So here I'm making a division in the gay world against the snippy queens who keep the cash to themselves and have fabulous haircuts. And us, the rest of us who give and are part of society, but also like to suck cock at the same time. So anyway, yeah, so today's show is really interesting. I put it together last minute. I really wasn't sure what I was going to do. You can reach me at 206-984-3617, 206-984-3617. Leave me a message. Leave me whatever. Tell me I'm great. I'd love to hear that. And, I mean, I haven't really heard anything, either good or bad. So whatever you want to say, give me a call. If you hate the show, give me a call. Let me hear from you. I just wanted to say one thing. One thing that really pisses me off is the tyranny of the higher educational system, which I think is a result from the rise of professionalism in the late 19th century. But anyway, recently, the dean of admissions at MIT, Marilee Jones, it was discovered that she lied on her original application back in 1979 that she had these degrees, certain degrees, and she didn't. Yet, despite the fact that she didn't have these degrees, didn't stop her from becoming dean of admissions over 28 years, doing the job, getting advances. She even wrote a book, right, about this. I mean, you know, it makes you think, you know, like, colleges and higher educational systems makes one believe that you need to have some sort of degree to do a certain job, and that's just bullshit. What you need is education, of course. You need apprenticeship. You need mentoring. That's what you need. You know, it's not to say that, you know, you take Joe Schmo and make him a biologist. That's not the case. You need that. That requires years of education. But somebody like the dean of admissions or a teacher, let's say, not to say that, I'm not saying teachers are not important, okay? But I'm saying is that there are certain jobs which that don't really require a degree to do it well. You know what I'm saying? What it does is maybe takes on-job training. It, you know, it does take education. It takes a mind, but it doesn't take a degree. I believe, you know, to me, I think today's colleges are like a mill for people. It's just a place for people to go, and they really don't know anything. I mean, I've met so many, you know, college people. They're stupid. They're absolutely stupid. They don't know the first thing about life. They don't, you know, and yet they have these degrees and they get these jobs or whatever, you know. I don't have a degree, and I've never lied about it either. But I'm able to do, you know, a lot. And, you know, like I said, giving me a fair and equal means of doing things, I can do it. I can get the job done, let me tell you. That's my can-do attitude. Can do. And I believe in education, don't get me wrong. What I don't like is the educational system. Also, what pisses me off is the textbook industry, which charges exorbitant amounts for textbooks, which are huge. You can't even carry them around. It breaks your back. A lot of, you know, this information isn't even used by the teacher. I had an accounting course. The book was like 1,000 pages or more. We didn't go through every page in that book. You know, it wasn't necessary. Get back to basics, you know. It should be the basics, you know. The book should be the basics. And then the other part of the learning should be what's happening in the real world and how's it applying to the basics, you know. Not what they have. These books are, like, stupid, you know. What we should do is, like, for business people, you know, what it is you have these thin textbooks of just basics, you know, debits, credits, this is how it works. This is what GAAP is, right? But the real learning comes when they read the Wall Street Journal, when they can read the business page and understand the implications of these financial decisions, you know. And you know, that's a real – that makes sense, right? That's important. That's something that – is real and useful. Oh, well, you know, I'm going to get out of my little rant here because, you know, I rant too much. But you know what? I can rant because it's my goddamn podcast. I produce it myself, and damn it, I will do it. So anyway, I'm going to let you go on with the show. And hooray for Merrill Lee Jones, okay?
La, 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 la. My Sherry Amour, lovely as a summer day. My Sherry Amour, distant as the Milky Way. My Sherry Amour, pretty little one that you're the only girl my heart beats for. How I wish that you were mine. In a cafe, or sometimes on a crowded street, I've been near you, but you never noticed me. My Sherry Amour, won't you tell me how could you ignore that behind that little smile I wore? How I wish that you were mine. La 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 la. Maybe someday you'll see my face among the crowd. Maybe someday I'll share your little distant cloud. Oh, Sherry Amour, pretty little one that I adore. You're the only girl my heart beats for. How I wish that you were mine. La 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 la.
Jose was sitting right there. Okay. This little section is an amalgamation of... here, I'm telling you what it's going to be. I really don't know what it's going to be. But what I wanted to talk about was something I read in Business Week, which is published by McGraw-Hill Companies, which I think McGraw-Hill does a lot of textbooks, which is part of my rant. But anyway, this is from November 27th of 2006. And the front page says, "Secrets, Lies, and Sweatshops, How Chinese Suppliers Hide the Truth from U.S. Companies." And reading this is that, you know, Walmart is one of the biggest companies in retail companies in the United States which import Chinese-made products. I'd have to say Target is probably close there, because if you go to Target... probably Kohl's as well. I don't know Kohl's as much, but I remember I was in Target, last year or whatever, I was walking through. I did a podcast on it. It was like everything is made in China. You can just feel the ghosts of the Chinese. So here we have, apparently we have these American companies who tell these factories in China that, yes, we'll buy your products, but you have to... you have to do certain things. You have to have, first of all, there's pay scale. You make sure they're paying them the right amount of money, right? Make sure that they're not violating. Let's see here. They can't be paid more than China's minimum wage and violating overtime rules. That's one thing. And also... they make sure that they're not sweatshops, really. You know, that there's enough room for them to go to the bathroom and they're not beaten or whatever. But, like, there's this one company, right, which has been caught, like, 3 times. Walmart has come over, did their audit, and they're given a warning saying, you know, next time, you know, this is like a second warning, you need to do better. You know, you have to live up to these standards. So this guy, he's what's his name? That's why I'm giving you the article in the magazine so you can go read it yourself. It's a company that makes mechanical pencils. There's one, the manager there in China. He knew that they were coming over, but he knew they were also not living up to the standards. You know, they were not paying them enough or doing whatever, cheating. So there are companies now springing up all over China, which what they'll do is they'll take care of the audit problems. What they do is they create fake books, authentic-looking records, so that when Walmart comes over, they're going to see these and they'll be like, oh, everything's okay. Mark off here. Apparently, Walmart also – or, you know, in this article, they mention Walmart. I'm sure it's any company in the United States who does the business with China. There's probably rules, though I'm just guessing that there are rules that are in place. I really don't know. That's an interesting question. If there's trade rules, you know, like if American businesses use Chinese-made products or products sent from anywhere in the world, how is there rules in place to keep American companies from profiting from sweatshops and you know, things like that? So I don't know if that's something that's a law or not, or whether this is just like a business etiquette. But it's etiquette at best, because I mean, apparently these audits can be faked anyway. You know, they I guess Walmart tells them when they were coming over, well, I'm coming over the week of May 5th. So May 5th, you know, they, you know, get their books out, their new books, the new set of books, making sure that it shows that they're paying the factory workers the minimum wage, at least. I'm tired, but I shouldn't be tired, because this is important. So it just pisses me off, you know. Audits, you know, do the audits really work, you know? What's the point of an audit, right? The point of an audit is to make sure things are working the way they should, right? That the policies that have been put in place are followed, right? But, you know, when, like, it seems to me at this point, like, companies be like, or American companies are just saying, yes, they've passed the audit, right? So they must be fine. But that's not the case. Just because you pass the audit doesn't mean everything's going good. Of course, there has to be a certain trust, too, that, you know, things are doing fine. I mean, apparently this company was caught twice, so they're given warnings, but it just seems fishy to me. You know, it seems fishy that, you know, companies who use these international, like China factories to manufacture and supply, you know, their goods. It seems fishy to me that companies are saying we don't use sweatshops. Well, they're only saying we don't use sweatshops because of the audit, not because it's a reality. You know what I'm saying? It's very it's very convoluted. It's sort of legalism almost, you know? Well, all we know is what is on the audit, you know? So I wonder if Walmart executives actually go to China and walk through these shops, or whether they send like low-end managers. And what are they told? Like, what are these people told to do when they go do the audit? Only look in certain places, ignore certain things. Like, I don't know. It's like, I'm conflicted, you know? But doesn't it seem rotten? I'm just trying to expose something that seems rotten to me. I mean, Business Week wrote about it. The other ones have put the something in my crawl to be bitch about, you know? Secrets, lies, and sweatshops. How provocative is that? You know, and it shows these pictures of Chinese people making shoes and pencils and stuff. So, you know, to be fair, I should read through this entirely and find out exactly what's going on. But that's what I did read through it a little bit, and I found out that what it is that these companies are developing in China that will take care of the audit problem. So if you're a Chinese supplier, if your factory makes something for an American company and you're not living up to the standards, American standards of the contract, then they'll come in and cook the books for you. So when it's tested by the auditors, it will pass, and they won't be fined, and they won't lose the contracts. So that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying, Sharita. There should be a higher standard, right? Yeah, right. You know, the thing is, the higher the standard in American corporations, it's the lower the standard. It's just bullshit. It's just they talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. You know, I mean, do you want to wear sweatshop made or use a sweat? You know, I'm using a mechanical pencil right now. This could have been made by sweat labor. The poor Chinese people making my pens for me. I mean, and the thing is, like, do I really care whether the Chinese are being exploited? I mean, part of me says, who the hell cares? Part of me thinks, why don't they just bring them? Why don't they have? Why, is it that much more expensive to produce the pencils here and stuff like that? I mean, it must have, I guess somebody must have figured it out, right? That it's cheaper for them to do it in China and ship it here in containers, which are not even checked when they come in through the, ports, right? Those big crates, as you ever see them on TV, they're not scanned and checked. You know, they could be bombs. It could be, you know, uranium or whatever in them, you know? It's over fucking pencils, you know, because you have to have some cheapskate pencil seller in America. Needs it cheap enough, right? Cheap, 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 cheap. Money, 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 money. Oh, don't get me. I heard something the other day about the Gilded Age. And it's very interesting, and I'm still trying to settle it in my mind about how really what it really is. But basically, you have the agrarian culture of America up to 1850. You have the Civil War, and then after that, industrialization until the end of the 19th century, leading into the 20th century. And then that last part was the Gilded Age, with the power was in the North. What happened is in the agrarian culture, the plantations and everything, America was an agricultural country. And for the most part, the power and money was in the South, right? Because of course they had free labor and everything. We had the Civil War, because the South wanted to secede from the rest of the Union because to keep slavery and actually to keep the power. Because I probably up to that point, there was a rise. The Industrial Revolution was rising, was starting to gain control. You had families like Rockefellers and Astors and everything in the North. I bet you that's what it is. It's the power over how the economy is another reason why the Civil War happened. But the South, okay, this is something interesting about the Southerners and the Northerners. The Southerners said, what's the difference between wage earners in your factories, right, and slaves that we have? Because the slaves, at least we take care of the slaves when they're old and keep them, in the plantation and everything. With you, the wage worker, once they get old, they're thrown out of their job and they have nothing, no money to make. So it's an interesting, parallel between the Industrial Revolution in the North, right, with the rise of the cities and the wage worker, right? Because what happened is that you had what was reduced were the people, independent businesses, I guess is what it is. I mean, people had artisans, like shoemakers and stuff, all that stuff was made, put in the factories, put the shoemakers out of business. And there was a loss in the art of it and the apprenticeship system, right? So instead of becoming your own man producing shoes, right, that's what you did. That's how you survived. That was your art. That was your life, You made money making shoes, selling shoes. You had apprentices. They came in and taught you. They learned, and it went on. Factories come in, and for shoes, for example, and all those shoemakers lose their businesses because of these cheap shoes, and they have to become wage earners. They become slaves to the industry. Industrialization is a type of slavery, because what it does is it takes your destiny from you. Industrialization takes your destiny. If you're a wage earner, if you're a worker, you don't really have a destiny that you can control. There's always the constraints of the corporation that control you, in what you do. Now, of course, there are laws and everything like that, civil rights laws and, that protect individuals. But it's not the same as it was, where you really were your own man and had control of your destiny. The Industrial Revolution, I guess, was necessary. By the end of the 19th century, we were as powerful industrially as powerful as Germany. So Germany, if America hadn't industrialized, it could have very well fallen when, Nazis took over Germany, because Germany was industrialized. The Industrial Revolution hit Europe, and Germany was very good at industrialization. Maybe that's why the Nazis rose first. I say first because I'm thinking of Dick Cheney and Karl Rove. But anyway, I'm not to imply anything bad, but, it's always fun to call them, Nazis. But anyway, because they're Republicans. But but no, not really, because, I really believe in Republican, the real Republican, principles and stuff from, 1850, okay? Except I don't, because they're like the industrialists, so it's really fucked anyway. I'm not even sure what what I believe in, or
I just have this idea that it should be smaller, that the industrialization is the root of all evil. But at the same time, it was inevitable. So what are you going to do, right? We're here, we're queer, and we're industrialized. So, corporations, got a personhood in the 19th century too. So that's something to think about. They shouldn't be considered a person, you know? And then they were. It's interesting. I forget how they. It was on Tom Ashbrook's On Point on NPR. They were talking about how the Industrial Revolution, when corporations earned their personhood, they claimed the Emancipation Act as precedent. And basically, what happened with that is that it took away the rights of black people that they had earned up to that point. I forget how it worked. But what it is, it said, well, corporations are individuals, and, it was passed and everything, and, the rest of the story. I have to look into that. I know it doesn't sound very coherent, but there's a book, which I forget the name of it, is The Age of Betrayal, maybe it's called. The guy, Tom Ashbrook from On Point, and NPR was talking to the guy. So it all goes together. So anyway, that's what I was thinking about. And I want to do some more research into that and sort of codify my ideas to make it more coherent. Maybe it's a little bit coherent. You probably get the idea. I think I did fairly well telling you the basics from memory, I might add, without notes. But Business Week, yeah, if you can get a copy of the November 27th, 2006 edition of Business Week and read about the secrets, lies, and sweatshops, it's fascinating. What I should do is I should read through this more carefully, and I'll give you a better report. But, not everything seems is as it seems, It's like, oh, it's okay because it passed the audit, but that doesn't make it okay, Crap happens. Look at Enron. Look at Enron, okay? Because of Enron, there's a new auditing for companies based Sarbanes-Oxley. I think they're senators who said it. And it's very stringent ways, like a more stringent way of doing audits for companies. It's more of a pain in the ass, basically, the stuff you have to do. But there was audits before that, right? So it's like, it doesn't make a difference what the audit is. If somebody wants to screw around, they're going to do it, You have to have somebody really go in there and look at every single number, every single piece of paper, You need to have somebody not just – the idea of the audit has to be changed, I think, the whole nature of what an audit is. It sounds sort of like the secret police, though, when an auditor's come and look through your thing, make sure everything's kosher.
My grandfather's clock was too large for the shelf, so it stood 90 years on the floor. It was taller by half than the old man himself, though it weighed not a penny weight more. It was bought on the morn of the day he was born, and was always his treasure and pride. But it stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. 90 years without slumbering, tick tock, tick tock, his life seconds numbering, tick tock, tick tock, it stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. In watching its pendulum swing to and fro, many hours had he spent when a boy. And in childhood and manhood the clock seemed to know and to share both his grief and his joy. For it struck 24 when he entered at the door with a blooming and beautiful bride. But it stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. 90 years without slumbering, tick tock, tick tock, his life seconds numbering, tick tock, tick tock, it stopped short, never to go again when the old man died.
Okay, Kenty, things are getting back to normal here, finally. I'm in the car. I have Jose in the car with me. I have La Papillon Chasse on one wrist and Saffron Troublant on the other. And I just got my coffee from the East Gloucester Coffee Place, and I'm going to look at the birds, and I'm in heaven now. Hi, Kenty. This is Johnny, your roving Rockport reporter, here to tell you the dirt, recent Cape Ann dirt, which I learned of by reading the Gloucester Daily Times. Let's see. One story is took place in Rockport at the Rockport National Bank. Rockport National Bank. Where a man was driving up to the drive-through ATM. And while he was there, this other guy, who was described as a middle-aged, heavy-set white man, came up to the window walking and asked the guy in the car whether the ATM machine was working. The car said, yeah, I think it is working, at which point the guy walked around the car, jumped into the passenger side of the car, and brandished a knife and demanded that the man give him $200. And so the man then said to him, you really don't want to do that. At which point, the guy jumped out of the car and ran away. Another story also in Rockport involves actually somebody we know. I guess I shouldn't say his name just in case, but this guy is kind of a blowhard, and his wife is kind of like poor white trash with fake tits, and he had been arrested several times for getting drunk and beating his wife up, and once threatening to kill his stepson. And so he actually, after several, you know, incidents like this, spent, I think, 18 months or 16 months, something like that, in the slammer in Middleton. And so anyway, I have to tell the second part of this story, and then you'll see how they relate in a minute. There's a Rockport police officer whose name is James O'Neill, something like that. Anyway, he was the police officer who was in charge of investigating and, I guess, you know, arresting people for domestic violence in Rockport. So what does he do? He pulls out a gun one day and shoots it into a chair like 6 inches away from his wife's head while he's drinking a beer with the other hand and like abusing his wife and the daughter and everything. So anyway, he's out of there. He's arrested and he is going to be charged. I think he actually has been charged already. So the first guy who, you know, has the wife with the poor white trash wife with the fake tits, wanted to file a warrant, and has something to do with town meeting, and he wanted to ask the town, is that, they're not city councilors, what are they? Anyway, whatever they are, to investigate investigate the police department's handling of this officer who was arrested for domestic abuse. And he claims that it has nothing to do with the fact that he himself was arrested for the same thing several times. And, you know, and the police are claiming that he is harassing them for their treatment of him. So anyway, it never got onto the town meeting ballot, and that's kind of the end of that. Although I think he said he was going to file some kind of thing. I don't know, the court, one of the courts. Maybe you didn't get that last one, Kenty, about the greyhound, because I'm not sure I had the machine on, so I'll repeat it. This couple with a greyhound took the greyhound into a dog grooming place. Bathed and cut. Well, not cut, I guess, because greyhounds don't have long hair, fur. So they put the dogs to dry them off into these boxes called drying boxes, which are cages that have like a big hose that blows hot air on the dogs. And what happened in this case was that the dog was left in the drying box too long and forgotten and developed heat stroke and died. And so the couple is suing the groomer, and the groomer is saying, no, it's not our fault and whatever. And somebody has introduced a bill into the Massachusetts legislature to outlaw these boxes, I guess, and they are outlawed in some states. Moving on to the next story, this story involves the mayor of the city of Gloucester and the police department. There's a sergeant in the police department, and a little aside here, this is the same sergeant who rescued me when I was lost in the woods a couple of years ago when I was birding and got lost and I couldn't find my way out of the woods and had to call the police on my cell phone. Very embarrassing, and I was in the paper, etc. Anyway, this guy is the head of the, or one of the heads of the patrolman's union. And he also was involved in an incident where the son of the mayor, John Bell is the mayor of Gloucester, the son of the mayor and the son's friend were stopped by the sergeant for something, I forget what, and a third of a marijuana joint was found in the car, and so, or in the purse of the woman, the friend, and I think she was arrested, and he was brought into the police department. Mayor says that he told them to treat his son just like they would treat anybody else, etc., but what developed was, this happened in 2002, the sergeant was passed over for promotion, and the person responsible for promoting police officers is the mayor. So the sergeant was passed over for promotion from sergeant to lieutenant, even though he got the highest score on the exam. I don't know if that happened once or twice. And so the sergeant is claiming that he's being discriminated against because of his union involvement and because he arrested the mayor's son. The mayor, of course, denies this. The police department is a mess in the city of Gloucester. There's a whole other story about the black policeman who's charging. That's another story for another day.
Beautiful dreamer, wake unto me. Starlight and dewdrops are waiting for thee. Sounds of the rude world heard in the day, lulled by the moonlight, have all passed away. Beautiful dreamer, queen of my song, list while I woo thee with soft melody. Gone are the cares of life's busy throng. Beautiful dreamer, awake unto me. Beautiful dreamer, awake unto me. Beautiful dreamer, out on the sea, Mermaids are chanting the wild laurelly. Over the streamlet, vapors are born, waiting to fade at the bright coming morn. Beautiful dreamer, beam on my heart, even as morn on the streamlet and sea. Then will all clouds of sorrow depart. Beautiful dreamer, awake unto me. Beautiful dreamer, awake unto me.
The Black Cottage by Robert Frost, from his collection of poems, North of Boston. We chanced in passing by that afternoon to catch it in a sort of special picture among tar-banded ancient cherry trees, set well back from the road in rank-lodged grass, the little cottage we were speaking of, a front with just a door between two windows, fresh painted by the shower a velvet black. We paused, the minister and I, to look. He made as if to hold it at arm's length, or put the leaves aside that framed it in. "Pretty," he said. "Come in. No one will care." The path was a vague parting in the grass that led us to a weathered window sill. We pressed our faces to the pane. "You see," he said, "everything's as she left it when she died. Her sons won't sell the house or the things in it. They say they mean to come in summer here, where they were boys. They haven't come this year. They live so far away. One is out west. It will be hard for them to keep their word. Anyway, they won't have the place disturbed." A buttoned haircloth lounge spread scrolling arms under a crayon portrait on the wall, done sadly from an old daguerreotype. That was the father as he went to war. She always, when she talked about war, sooner or later, came and leaned, half knelt against the lounge beside it, though I doubt if such unlifelike lines kept power to stir anything in her after all the years. He fell at Gettysburg, or Fredericksburg. I ought to know. It makes a difference which. Fredericksburg wasn't Gettysburg, of course. But what I'm getting to is how forsaken a little cottage this has always seemed, since she went more than ever but before. I don't mean altogether by the lives that had gone out of it, the father first, then the two sons, till she was left alone. Nothing could draw her after those two sons. She valued the considerate neglect she had at some cost taught them after years. I mean by the world's having passed it by, as we almost got by this afternoon. It always seems to me a sort of mark to measure how far 50 years have brought us. Why not sit down if you are in no haste? These doorsteps seldom have a visitor. The warping boards pull out their own old nails with none to tread and put them in their place. She had her own idea of things, the old lady, and she liked to talk. She had seen Garrison and Whittier, and had her story of them. One wasn't long in learning that she thought whatever else the Civil War was for, it wasn't just to keep the states together, nor just to free the slaves, though it did both. She wouldn't have believed those ends enough to have given outright for them all she gave. Her giving somehow touched the principle that all men are created free and equal. And to hear her quaint phrases, so removed from the world's view today of all those things, that's a hard mystery of Jefferson's. What did he mean? Of course, the easy way is to decide it simply isn't true. It may not be. I heard a fellow say so. But never mind. The Welshman got it planted where it will trouble us 1,000 years. Each age will have to reconsider it. You couldn't tell her what the West was saying and what the South to her serene belief. She had some art of hearing and yet not hearing the later wisdom of the world. White was the only race she ever knew. Black she had scarcely seen, and yellow never. But how could they be made so very unlike by the same hand working in the same stuff? She had supposed the war decided that. What are you going to do with such a person? Strange how such innocence gets in its own way. I shouldn't be surprised if in this world it were the force that would at last prevail. Do you know, but for her, there was a time when to please younger members of the church, or rather say non-members in the church, whom we all have to think of nowadays, I would have changed the creed a very little. Not that she ever had to ask me not to. It never got so far as that, but the bare thought of her old tremulous bonnet in the pew and of her half asleep was too much for me. Why, I might wake her up and startle her. It was the words, descended into Hades. That seemed too pagan to our liberal youth. You know, they suffered from a general onslaught. And, well, if they weren't true, why keep right on saying them like the heathen? We could drop them. Only, there was the bonnet in the pew. Such a phrase couldn't have meant much to her. But suppose she had missed it from the creed, as a child misses the unsaid good night and falls asleep with heartache. How should I feel? I'm just as glad she made me keep hands off, for dear me, why abandon a belief merely because it ceases to be true? Cling to it long enough, and not a doubt it will come true again, for so it goes. Most of the change we think we see in life is due to truths being in and out of favor. As I sit here, and oftentimes I wish I could be a monarch of a desert land I could devote and dedicate forever to the truths we keep coming back and back to. So desert it would have to be, so walled by mountain ranges half in summer snow, no one would covet it or think it worth the pains of conquering to force change on. Scattered oases where men dwelt, but mostly sand dunes held loosely in tamarisk, blown over and over themselves in idleness. Sand grains should sugar in the natal dew, the babe born to the desert, the sandstorm retard mid waste my cowering caravans. There are bees in this wall, he struck the clapboards. Fierce heads looked out, small bodies pivoted. We rose to go. Sunset blazed on the window. You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.